From the studios of Boise State Public Radio News, I'm Gemma Gaudet. More Idaho Matters right now. Almost 5 years after two Eastern Idaho children went missing and were later found burned and buried on his property, Chad Daybell's multiple murder trial started yesterday. Now, Daybell is accused of killing 7-year-old Joshua J.J. Vallo and his sister, Tylee Ryan, and Daybell's ex-wife, Tammy. And he also faces the death penalty. Now, he has pleaded not guilty in this case. His wife, Lori Vallo, was convicted last year in the deaths of her two children. All Things Considered host Troy Oppy watched the first day of the trial where jury selection is taking place, and Troy's joining us now to talk more about this. Troy, nice to have you on the program.
Glad to be here, Gemma.
So, Troy, can you just give us a recap of the case so far?
And you kind of encompassed it there. Lori Vallo is currently in Arizona. She faces charges there of conspiracy to commit murder in the death of her fourth husband, her ex-husband, Charles Vallo, and then the attempted murder of her niece's husband at the time. And she has also appealed her conviction in Idaho to the state Supreme Court. That appeal remains in progress. So that's kind of where things are there. Chad Daybell faces 9 total counts, the murder and conspiracy charges, as you mentioned. He also faces charges of insurance fraud for illegally collecting the insurance payout that was associated with the death of his ex-wife, and then the theft of the Social Security benefits that were meant for the children and the children's guardians in the case.
So, Troy, what exactly then is going on this week during the trial? As I mentioned in the introduction, today, Tuesday, would be day 2 of the trial.
Yeah, in fact, they're in day 2 of jury selection, and what they're trying to do is, it's a process called voir dire, and they are trying to get a group of 50 potential jurors to then be whittled down to 18 total, 12 primary jurors and 6 alternates that will actually hear this case and move forward over the next 2 months. And so they're asking questions, kind of general questions, would participating in this proceeding create a hardship for your family, scheduling, financial, otherwise? They're checking in on what people have consumed about this case in the media or otherwise, whether or not they think they can put some of that information to the side that they may have already consumed and deliver a fair opinion based on what happens in court and not what they've consumed outside the courtroom, those types of things.
Mm-hmm. And Troy, my understanding is the jurors have had to also fill out a questionnaire. Can you talk to us about what's on that?
Yeah, so this kind of helps guide the initial process. And they do this first in a group setting. I believe Nate Eaton of Idaho News or East Idaho News was saying they were bringing groups of 16 potential jurors in at a time. And so Judge Stephen Boyce will talk to them. They'll hear from defense and prosecution as well as they kind of work their way through these questions that are on the questionnaire. And they talk about different things as a group, and then individual jurors are called back in for one-on-one conversations, deeper conversations about what they've put on this questionnaire. And I want to play a sound clip from one of the prosecutors in the case, Lindsay Blake. She used an analogy talking to the groups about how she has a very picky eater at home, and as a parent, I can relate to that. And you know that if there's a meal that your kid likes, you just make it that way. Even if your adult home chef brain is telling you, well, I could make this a lot better with just a little of this and a little of that. And here's how she finished that analogy with a group of prospective jurors yesterday.
So with this court, because I'm like a kid, we're going to get instructions from the judge. And if the judge gives you instructions, they may say, these are the specific elements of a crime. And sometimes it's easy to look at that and say, well, that doesn't make a lot of sense. Or if you added this, it would make it a little bit better. Would everyone here agree that regardless of what you may think with the rule and instruction given by the judge, that you could absolutely follow what he outlines?
And so here's what she's getting at, the ability to follow instructions of the court on what evidence or testimony might be allowed or what the definition of a particular crime might be. You cannot sit on a jury and make up your own recipe.
Right, exactly. You cannot. So, Troy, one of the things we've been hearing is that there's some complaints about the quality of the sound coming out of the courtroom. So, A, why does that matter? But B, who would be in charge of that?
Well, and that is the production, if you want to call it that, of the courtroom broadcast is the responsibility of the court. Judge Boyce did not allow individual recording devices, photographs, anything to happen inside the courtroom, and is providing a stream. And they're doing that for a lot of reasons that I won't go down that road at this time. But the court is doing that. And so what you're getting is a microphone that is meant to pick up everything as much as possible. It's also amplifying the sound within that room. So what we're hearing is both, you know, the natural sound of someone speaking into a microphone or close to a microphone, as the case is, and then the echo, the reverb in the room coming into that microphone as well. And I will note, I cleaned up that soundbite that we just heard a little bit, reducing that reverb to try to make it more discernible. And also the clips that I'm playing, an editorial decision, the clips that I'm playing are not going to include any comments from prospective jurors today.
Okay. So, Troy, you mentioned that they're looking to get a group of 50 jurors to then whittle it down to the amount that they need. But at this point, I am assuming, Troy, that they have already let some potential jurors go. And is some of it due to things like hardship? And if that's the case, can you give us some examples of that?
Yeah, so they had two groups of 16 yesterday, and half of them advanced toward that pool of 50. And when we're talking about hardships, you know, folks who were dismissed, including single income earners for their household, would this create a hardship in caring for your family or earning income for the family or being able to complete your job and retain your job if you've got to step away for 2 months, which is the length of time, maybe even a little bit longer, that this trial is expected to take. So all those were kind of reasons why a potential juror would be excused for hardship reasons. There were other reasons that people were excused, and most of it was centered around potential biases that they have due to consuming information about this case in the media already and maybe having made up their opinions. Some people who said, yes, I have consumed this information, were then asked the follow-up question, you know, do you think you can set that aside and be an impartial juror in this case? And they said yes, and those people moved forward. Others didn't. And I brought another clip of Judge Stephen Boyce in this case talking to one man about this issue.
Well, you've indicated you follow up the cases in the media. There's a question, has that caused you to already form an opinion regarding the guilt or innocence of Chad Guy Daybell in this case? Your answer was yes.
And the state moved forward with some additional questioning, prosecution did, and would have been okay with continuing that person forward, but ultimately he was excused from the jury due to those kind of preconceived notions.
Okay, so Troy, you mentioned that they're expecting this trial to take 2 months.
Yeah.
And so is that... So I'm curious about the 2 months. Is that starting from yesterday when they started, you know, jury selection, or is it from the point of opening arguments? And the reason why I ask that is, again, because they are having to find a group of potential jurors, 50, right, and then whittle it down to there, this is going to just take a long time to find, you know, jurors who they believe, both sides, right, defense and prosecution, that can be fair and unbiased.
Right, because as they get to that group of 50, then defense and prosecution go to work on striking jurors that they may not want to be as part of that jury, and that can get a lot more detailed and a lot more lengthy, that process. And so, you know, at the pace that they're going now, they might not reach opening arguments for a week or even 2 weeks. And to your point, the range of time has been that has come up in court is 8 to 10 weeks. And it's very flexible because, as I know we'll talk more about in a second, this is a capital case, which is an entirely different element for sentencing and all these other things, but also complicates jury selection as well, makes it a lot more intentional and adds a very complex layer to that. So the time that they're talking about is 8 to 10 weeks, and, you know, again, a very squishy figure, to use one of my favorite phrases. But that is really, once opening arguments begin, they're looking at about 2 months.
Wow. Okay. That is a big commitment for potential jurors, for sure. So as you just mentioned, Troy, this trial itself, even though Chad Daybell's wife, Lori Vallow Daybell, her trial happened last year. I mean, of course, covered nationally, internationally. She is now behind bars. However, she was not facing the death penalty. Right. So can you talk to us a little bit more? I know you mentioned it a little bit just a second ago, but that actually makes big differences in how this case moves forward and even how it's tried.
Absolutely, it does. And I want to play another clip from Judge Boyce now in those conversations. And again, these are kind of born out of the answers to the potential juror questionnaire, what they write, how they view the death penalty. They have a chance to expand on that in voir dire, this process, both in a group setting and an individual setting. But here's kind of one of the ways that he was framing those questions to the potential jurors he spoke with yesterday.
A question, do you support or oppose the death penalty? You check the box support. I notice on the general attitudes part, which gave you some multiple choice, pick the one you like best, you said you were generally opposed to the death penalty. So in answering that question, would you say you support or oppose, or is it a more complicated answer than that?
And universally, the answer was almost always among potential jurors yesterday that it's more complicated than that. And some jurors ended up being excused from the case. After this line of questioning, most moved forward and were not excused for concerns related to this. But this will continue to come up through the jury selection process.
Okay, so before I let you go, Troy, just so we're all clear on this, day two of jury selection, but this could take upwards of 1 to 2 weeks to actually sit the jury.
Yeah, that's what it appears right now. They've got to get to that 50 number, and then things get more complicated from there with prosecutors and defense attorneys able to strike potential jurors for much more nuanced reasons.
All right. Well, we really appreciate your coverage on this and getting us up to date. Troy, appreciate it.
Glad to be here.
We've been talking with All Things Considered host Troy Appiah about the first day of the Chad Daybell multiple murder trial. It is happening in Boise, as we mentioned, day two. This entire trial is expected to last between 8 to 10 weeks once opening arguments begin. Thanks so much for listening to Idaho Matters. Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Gemma Gaudette. We'll see you tomorrow.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.